Welcome to the Barth Calderone Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, this is Paul Hitchcock, and thank you for joining us here. I want to jump into this. I have with me Jerry Connery, who is an insurance expert, risk manager, specifically handles people with rental income properties. Jerry, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, and love having you on board here. You've been in the business for 35 years, but let's get into this. If you want to tell anybody else here about your background, that would be great. But let's jump into risk management for rental properties.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So what do we need to know?
Well, you know, most people that are purchasing insurance on their passive income rental properties, okay?
Yeah.
They're doing it the wrong way. They're basically a hamster on a wheel. They are putting themselves through a process in which they focus on a premium, instead of focusing on proper protection. And then they find themselves wanting at the time of a claim and realizing that had they had the right protection in place, that claim would have been much more significant. It would have been a much bigger indemnification, and that they saved $40 and it cost them $400,000.
Right.
I like to use that example because I have five of those in the last 10 years that I could go and show the exact way that $40 would have got them $400,000 more in value in at the time of the loss.
Why, Jay, so, is that because they're getting misinformation up front as they look at risk management for their properties, or, you know, what leads to that problem?
The first and foremost reason is their lack of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And they think of insurance as a commodity,
right.
And they think that they could take the declarations page of a policy from someone and pass it along to a second person and say, can you get me this cheaper? Or can you find me a better solution? And they're focusing on a single page and a single set of numbers, and they're not considering what page 37 says. They're not considering what endorsements and forms are on it. They're not considering what warranties and conditions exist. And honestly, I've probably said enough words that their own broker would go, their mind spinning, and they'd move on to something different because they are perpetuating that experience of being on the wheel. The wheel is focusing on premium and not protection. And let me just say that it isn't just a matter of buying the right policy. It's a matter of having a consultative process in which you learn how to own it, you learn how to manage it, you learn how to silo the risk so that if something does go sideways, it doesn't affect all the other things that you've acquired in your lifetime. And that's where asset management, whether it's with a law firm or with an insurance broker, asset management is an active process of either applying law the right way or applying insurance protection the right way. And why not combine them both the right way?
It's a great analogy. Yeah, because, you know, when people look at asset protection on the legal side from us, you know, we go through the front end process of really understanding where the vulnerabilities are and, you know, plugging up the holes. And so for you, I'd love to hear about your process you go through and what people should be looking for, common mistakes people make as we get into the weeds here on proper risk management on the insurance side.
Well, it's hard to get in. Paul, I do want to do what you want from me, but I also am trepidatious and cautious because I don't want someone to hear something from me and think that it is a fit all or an end all.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, I understand. I'll try to approach it the right way. Okay.
Yeah.
Just let me know if I'm not going in the right direction.
No, that's great. Yeah.
So the first thing that everybody thinks of when they think of insurance, okay, is, well, who's the carrier? Who's my agent? And how much is it going to cost me? Okay. they also might go to, okay, well, what is the requirement of the bank or the mortgage company or somebody that could be lording over them with requirement, right?
Right.
They instead of focusing on what their needs are, they focus on the needs or the requirements of the lender or the bank.
Right.
The problem with that is that the lender and the bank is only a portion of the owner of that building, right? The part that they have collateralized. The rest of it is the landlords. The rest of it is the lessor. And so, and we don't look at apartment owners as apartment owners. We look at as apartment owners as residential lessors. That's the way, that's our mindset. And so what is a residential lessor? Well, it is somebody who is providing space for people to live in, to domicile in. And there's a lot of ways that you can entangle yourself in liabilities and exposures just by the way you advertise. Do you call yourself a safe building? You've just picked up a whole bunch of liability because you represented in the way you marketed your property that it's safer than others. So if somebody has a different experience, you can generate a lawsuit. You could have generated a lawsuit against you because you have represented or warranted through your marketing that your building is safer than another. That is a no-no.
Interesting.
Yet it is a problem that I see 50% of the property owners do.
Safer in what regard are they saying? Would they say they're safer?
Just think how you've seen properties marketed and what they represent. You know, like you can say that you have these added security features.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay.
You could talk about the features. You can't talk about the benefits because the benefit is measured by the receiver, not by the sender.
Ah. So
the receiver believes that they're getting this benefit and you are trying to represent that they're going to get this benefit. And they sue you because they have a loss in somewhere in that gap. You now, it doesn't mean they're going to be successful. And let me be very, very clear in this conversation that, yes, you have insurance because you want to transfer the exposure of a large risk by exchanging it for the small loss of premium. Okay.
Right.
That is the basic premise of insurance. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's also the premise that a large number of people who pay that small premium can cover that one major loss that somebody in the group has. If insurance only worked like that today, it would be great. And we could talk about that in a second too.
But yeah.
The reality of the marketplace right now is that the insurance marketplace is constricting. It's getting harder to find good cover. It's getting harder to have a premium that is budgetable, okay? And a lot of folks are getting ridiculously surprised by their broker because the market that they're with, the market meaning the insurer that they're with, has evolved their pricing model or they've evolved their underwriting model, and suddenly they're either being non-renewed and they are in a marketplace that is so upside down and topsy-turvy as it is today that they are thrown into an environment where their insurance can go up 3, 4, 5x of what they're currently paying, because now they're not just a risk, they're a tainted risk because they've been non-renewed. So what I'm here to talk about today is not just this. It's right. The totality of having somebody that understands the nuance of ownership and of rental and leasing. And there's lots of ways that people can get tied up into loss. The first and foremost, like I said, is what you represent in the sale. Mm-hmm. The second is what you represent in your contract. When was the last time you had a risk manager review your leasing contracts? I understand that a lawyer is going to focus on legal words.
Right.
But
right.
A risk manager is going to look beyond that. They're going to look at what's the potentiality of loss. They're going to look at what's the likelihood that somebody will try to hold you accountable for something. And they're going to look at what's the legal obligation based on the contract that is the potential of loss. All of those things need to be weighed, and then they need to be balanced with market. It has to be balanced with market. Like, if the insurance policy is going to cost this, and you can only get this in rents, who's going to pay that gap, and how's it going to be accomplished?
Right.
Maybe there doesn't need to be a gap. The solution is that before you go to market the next time, you work with somebody that can help you improve your risk so that you have more risk takers interested in the risk, and now they're competing for the business instead of trying to find the one that will do it.
So what's the best practice there, like for the contracts? So zero in on that for a minute. And it's interesting. I want to mention, by the way, that when you mentioned market forces and increases in costs, you're working across the country,
I am.
not just in California. You're headquartered in California, you're working across the country. So on the contracts, Jerry, what is the best practice for the property owner up front when you get together with them? Is it conversation takes place about how they're using the property,
Yes.
who's living there? I mean, how do you figure out the contract and get
So
it right?
most folks go in, they talk to a lawyer or they talk to an association who says, do you want dogs? Do you want this? There's you go through this rigmarole of what you
Yeah.
do and don't want in your property, and then you write those rules into your leases, right?
Right.
But a recent evolution in our market is that the concept of a service dog has taken on a whole new meaning. And folks can go out and get their animal certified. And certified is what? I need an emotional support animal because I have this issue. And
Yeah.
my dog next to me, or my cat, or my boa constrictor. I mean, seriously, it's amazing what I have seen. And I have seen lawsuits in which somebody was not rented a space, and that they re represented that the reason they weren't rented a space is they relied on the ADA of all things. They called themselves disabled, and then they said that your practice discriminated against them. So a risk manager who's seen these kinds of losses knows how to help you protect yourself from them.
Oh, okay. Great
Okay.
example.
Who helps you? Like, for instance, if you're in the state of California and you have crazy laws that you have to constantly be on top of, you've got to continue to be prepared to evolve your contract, to evolve your process. And those that use property managers need to be making sure that their property manager is actually throwing them a rope and pulling them to new and proper places, because they have within themselves associations that are advising where claims are coming from, where losses are coming, where lawsuits are being generated from. So you think about the nuance of the little things that I've talked about, which I assure you, everybody that jumped on this wasn't thinking about any of the things I just mentioned, but I want
Yeah.
you to see. I have a client who I picked up this year that was with a different broker, who has over 1,000 units in LA and Orange County. Okay. And he had it with an insurer, and each risk was siloed. So I'm sorry, every property was an LLC, and each one had its own insurance policy.
Okay.
And he had a tenant that during COVID stopped paying. And then when COVID rules and the restrictions were released, they go in and they find that the property was completely torn apart, that it was it, it this person took advantage and did a lot of damage. Further to that, the person gets a lawsuit, the owner of the building gets a lawsuit from the tenant claiming that they were treated discriminatorily, that they were a protected class.
Yeah.
And then they define how they were injured. And now they go from having a simple, insurance policy that is supposed to be responding to a bodily injury or property damage claim. Well, let's try to figure out what kind of a loss this is. If somebody's claiming they've been discriminated against, is that bodily injury? It isn't. Is it property damage? It isn't. So the only way that they're going to have the kind of liability that's going to protect them is to have an insurance policy that covers management exposure, the
Interesting.
management of the property.
Yeah.
So it's picking up professional liability. It's picking up all the soft exposures. It's picking up economic loss. Without it, they're just going to get a declination from their insurer,
Right.
because it that policy, I'm talking about an apartment owner's policy, General liability only responds to a bodily injury and to damage to somebody else's property. That's it.
Yeah, people aren't thinking about that, of course.
No, because no bank in the land is telling them they need the other thing.
Well, you bring to mind a couple of cases we were dealing with as a law firm where I want you to comment on this. One is our landlord attorneys who represent, you know, our property owner clients. They're very busy, unfortunately, with all the liability going on. But there were, you know, they've seen an increase of mold claims, right, in certain areas of the country. And we had a landlord, you know, a landlord of a building fight a claim. He said, well, there was mold, cleaned it up, didn't think it was a big deal, and lost. And it was about a $1.2 million judgment against him for attorney's fees and then the money paid to the tenant for this mold issue as a tenant and her young child. But so mold comes up a lot. It's one case. And then another one was somebody was sued because they had a back unit legal with a physical therapist who had an office offsite, but the landlord was new and allowing occasionally this renter to treat patients on the property in this back unit. And somebody got hurt on the property and landlord got sued, and the insurance policy wasn't covering this liability because this person, it wasn't a business thing. It was a business thing going on at a residential unit. So what do you comment on those issues?
So you're making my case. You know, you have to, so when, as an insurance broker at 35 years, when somebody hands me a policy that I didn't write and then asks me if it's adequate, one of the things that I do is I read all the declared cover, which is the front page or the front couple pages where it says policy number, the named insured. By the way, vesting is really important. And I can tell you that about 22%, 23% of the policies that are written out there are written wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The proper entity is not being properly protected. Wow. It is really important, especially those that own properties and trusts, properties in LLCs. They'll go to a company, they'll go to certain carriers, insurance carriers that are mostly in the personal lines world, okay? Mm-hmm. And then they dabble in insurance, but they don't have the right forms. And if it's if it happens to be a unit that's four units or fewer, then it's being written on personal lines insurance paper.
Which is a bad idea?
Well, it's not a bad idea if it's owned by an individual.
Okay.
Because the cover is comprehensive personal liability, not comprehensive general liability.
Okay.
The difference between them, general is for an entity and personal is for a person. So all the language is he, him, her, instead of they, organization. And it's huge at how it can imperil the risk.
Oh, really?
Give an example. Yeah. You could have a member of an LLC, right?
Yep.
Jerry Connery owns Connery Apartments LLC, okay? And I'm the single member. But I can't have an insurance policy in the name of Jerry Connery. It has to be in the Connery Apartments LLC name.
And that really could come into play and that could nail you?
Well, when you get a lawsuit and it's in the name of Connery Apartments LLC, and you don't have a policy in the name of Connery Apartments LLC, then you're paying for the defense.
Okay.
There's no insurer that's going to engage that claim. They'll take it and then they'll deny it. They'll say that this is not the named entity that we insure.
Oh, okay.
And they're not going to reform and correct that at the time of a loss.
Right, right.
So the time to do that is before you buy the policy or before you renew it. If it happens to be formed improperly, then the vesting needs to be fixed before you renew it, or you've got a whole nother year that you're wrong and you've written it the wrong way.
Yeah, it's like asset protection planning we do. You can't change things when it's a hair on fire situation, the liability is going on. It's like what you just said. I mean, the liability is there. You can't say, oh, I had the wrong name on this form, let me change it. The answer is no, you're toast.
Sure. I mean, for folks that are in your in your space, you know, they come to you and they say, "Hey, I want a will. I need a trust. I need something. I want to protect my family in the event something happens to me." Okay, we're going to do that. We're going to show you exactly how to transfer the process and all these things. Well, insurance needs to work similarly. And the document isn't a trust anymore. Now the document is an insurance policy, but the vesting on the document says very clearly, this is the named insured. This is who we are defending. This is who we are indemnifying. This is who we're going to react to. And there is no endorsement later that can properly add it in an effective way that's going to provide the defense that the entity actually needs. So those people that are being told by agents that you can still have it in your name, they're wrong. And they'll only learn that at the time of a loss in a courtroom or somewhere where they're being told that, yes, your insurance company's right. You don't have protection because that was not a named entity on the policy. And the courts have ruled on this time and again, and the case law is clear. But for some reason, the policyholders and the assureds out there haven't gotten the message because, well, it happened to somebody else. It didn't happen to them. Does it have to be something that you experience before you're going to evolve? I think not. And so by this, anybody that's on here today that's learning about asset protection and if that asset is is an income property, well, they just learned something very important to go back and look at. The vesting, first and foremost, who owns it? By the way, policies can have more than one named insured. So sometimes you could fix this with a simple endorsement that costs no money whatsoever.
When would you do that? Like, what get what, how, why would that come into play?
It would come in this way because the I kind of like sometimes I kind of equate my like people say, what do you do? You know, and how do you run your operation? I kind of run my operation like a surgeon, okay? I use nurses, I use physician's assistants, I use front office people and back office people. But in the end, I'm the surgeon, okay? And I prescribe. And so I will go in and I will prescribe the proper protection. And then I go to market the same way you would take that prescription to a drugstore and you would get it filled. And the filler is the insurer writing a proper form. And then, you know, who makes the drug? Well, that's the insurer prior to writing that policy, creating forms and filing rates with their various insurance departments so that they can offer the protections at the pricing that they have under the conditions and the rules that they have, verified and validated by an insurance commissioner. Right. So that's the whole process of what an insurer does in order to offer their product. But if someone doesn't write the prescription for the product, it could be sitting on the shelf in the drugstore, but it is not ingested and doing any good in the body.
Great analogy.
So we got to get the policy written right, and it starts with having the right person writing the policy.
So when you go, so you have the upfront in-depth analysis, which is the best practice for anybody, and then these things like the right coverages, you're looking at all this stuff. Like if you're running a business on the property, if you've got units in the back, I mean, all that has to be talked about, right?
Here's our best practice recommendation. Okay. From a liability standpoint, you should have a deep dive with an attorney and a risk manager at least every 3 years. Why? Because of law changes and because your assets have grown, or if they have grown, you need to make sure that you have protected them right in the way that they're organized, in the way that they're owned, and then in the way that they're insured. And so, about every 3 years, we do a deep dive on that. But from a property standpoint, you should be having every year a conversation with the broker or the agent to make sure, hey, what's the cost of construction today? And let me tell you, cost of construction is very much market driven, but it is not market value of a property. Because let's say you've got a 15 unit apartment complex, okay? It's made up of two buildings, right? You have contractor costs, you have demolition costs, you have varying costs of materials and labor and subcontract labor. All of these things go into the restoration of a property at the time of loss. Mm-hmm. Well, if the labor rate in your community went up 40% in the last 18 months because of market-driven rate, and your coverage is still 18 months old, then it right now doesn't have adequate protection if you were to suffer a loss. Now, most people don't suffer total losses. They suffer partial losses. And they think, well, I've got enough here for the typical loss. But if you're going into buying an insurance policy with the idea that you're only going to be the guy that gets the partial loss, I don't know. I don't see that as being the person who is here listening to this conversation today, right? Because they want to do it right. They want to be properly protected. They want to build in all these costs and understand what those costs are going to be. And then a good analytical broker like we are will actually tell them what their cost of total cost of risk is per $1,000 of revenue. Mm-hmm. And very simply, they can start working backwards to figure out, and if they do the same thing with their utility costs and with their service costs and with their with their debt service that they're doing with the bank, they can figure out exactly what their pricing needs to be in order to be adequately based in rental income. And we believe in the folks that care about that. The folks that would take the time to not put their finger in the air and try to figure out what they could get, but instead determines what they need. Those are the folks that we would resonate with, because our process is, we actually very rarely tell anybody anything. We are not in the business of telling people stuff. We're in the business of asking the right questions. Mm-hmm. And when we ask the right questions, just like a lawyer would, okay, it exposes what they haven't thought of. It exposes what they haven't considered. It exposes what they need to evolve. And then they ask us what is the best way to evolve it. And that's where the consultative side of our business evolves the client from where they are to where they need to be. And the best part is that, you know, if you're working with people like me, and there's only 70 of us in the country, okay, 70 of us that combine the data analytics and the science of risk management into a process in which we actually, and by the way, we're also an MBA in finance, okay? So we have that third component. And what we do is we take all of that data and we help advise investors on how to get the most out of their asset. And isn't that what every one of them are trying to accomplish? And if your broker isn't talking to you that way, then they probably aren't aware enough to know why they're not talking that way.
Well said. Well said.
Education.
Well said. Yeah. And Jerry, how do you handle when there is a liability? You know, someone has a claim. What's your role in, you know, working with the insurance carrier and the client? And what's the best practice there on how to deal with a claim?
Well, at my agency, we actually have on board salaried risk managers, and we have on board salaried claims managers. Okay. Yeah. And what do? They drive the process. Mm-hmm. So first of all, you want to get off on a good foot with an insurer on a claim, make sure that all the data that they need up front is there. Mm-hmm. So working with the right agent or broker is going to get you to think about all the things you need to know before making that call to the insurer. Most of the complaints people have is that the carrier didn't engage quickly enough on the claim. They're like, it was 4 days ago and I haven't heard from anybody. And why? Well, they sent you a mail, US mail, because they didn't get an email. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're calling a landline, which is the very place that burned down, and the calls are going nowhere. So they don't have a mobile number to reach you on.
Yeah.
But we understand all these things, right? Yeah. So we just, you think that it is extraordinary, but it's not. It's quite ordinary. But it is stuff that people take for granted and we don't. Then on the other end, the insurer knows that we're there. They know that if anything, and we tell them right up front, like if you called today and you said, hey, I had this loss, we would put you on a call with the insurer and we're on the call too. And when they ask questions that we can answer, policy number, policy date, loss date, we feed that data while you're listening, but we're feeding that data so that you hear that we understand what happened.
Right. Yeah.
And then when they need nuance, who was there, who witnessed it, who saw it, how did you learn about it? Then you were there and we're there to document. Mm-hmm. So if anybody says anything later that's different, you have an advocate that can bring it right back to where it actually is and say, no, they got it wrong. Right. This is what they said. And then they correct it. And suddenly the reaction of the market is different than they anticipated.
Yeah.
Why? Well, because correct data is going to get the straightest line to getting that claim paid.
Yeah. Well, what jumped out at me as an advocate is, you know, whoever they're working with, you've got to have an advocate on your side when it comes to a liability. I know it's the same on the legal side too. And what our attorneys often say also is that the insurance that you provide, Jerry, or, you know, insurance that anybody has is really the first line of defense, right? You want it to be, you know, in place, everything's working, it's all locked and loaded so that a claim can be driven to insurance and it's all, you know, appropriate and proper. And you really want that to happen versus having to go the next level, which is where we get involved, asset protection, the legal side, because it becomes a personal liability because your insurance wasn't done right or you don't have enough insurance.
Paul, let me correct something you said, or let me at least validate something you said, okay? Okay. So I want you to think in the way you just said what you said, but I want you to think proactively and reactively. Proactively, you do go to the attorney and you make sure that the contracts are written the right way, that the leases are done the right way, that you're not in your marketing and your advertising, you're not overstating certain things. You're doing all of that the right way. You're doing non-discriminatory things so that you don't catch that loss. Okay.
Right.
That's
yep.
the proactive side.
Yeah.
Lawyers help you with that and risk managers help you with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And one good advantage of a good risk manager is that we don't actually charge hourly rates. Okay.
Right.
So
yeah.
we work for the commissions that we earn for the policies.
Mm-hmm.
So all you're getting is a better service for the same cost, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Then at the time of the loss, sometimes you want that claim to go directly to the carrier, but you want to have somebody you could run it past. What if it's I want to use something that everybody gets. Somebody opened their car door on somebody else's door, okay? And mm-hmm. they damaged their car and they damaged the other car, okay? That could turn into a $3,000 or $4,000 claim like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or not. How do you prevent it from getting there? Well, maybe what you do is you talk reason, you show that you have insurance and that if it's necessary that we can always turn to that. But what's your favorite body shop that you can go and have this work done?
Yeah.
Then you go and you get it done and you look at the cost. And if the cost is less than 50% of your premium, you absolutely do not make that claim.
Okay. Good advice. Yeah.
Why? Because that claim changes the answers on the application the following year. Has there been any losses? Yes, instead of no.
Okay.
Then they're going to want to know what happened. Okay. And what's the likelihood that's going to arise again? Well, you're going to park that car 1,000 times in the next year, okay? So if they see that this circumstance turned into an $1,800 or $2,000 loss, okay, and that ate up all the profit in that policy in 1 year, what do you think is going to happen to the rate? It has to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because how are you going to differentiate from a risk that has no losses versus one that does?
Right.
So you only take the losses that need to go to the insurer. And when you have a good risk management firm there to assist you, they can evaluate what the outcome of that claim is going to be before even filing. And then
love it.
Have the opportunity. Imagine if you got all the way through it and you found out that it was $1,500 and that you would have just preferred to have written that check and not gone through the whole process. Because let me tell you something. The $1,500 is not the cost of that claim. every day that claim is live, you are going to be involved in questions back and forth. And that takes you, the owner of the property, off your strategic purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And if your strategic purpose is to have a 95% occupancy rate and to have this much average rent per square foot or unit or whatever measure you have in your KPIs, all right? Well, the minute you are now focusing on getting quotes, going out and filing claims, doing depositions, all the things related to a loss, and it just depends on the type of loss as to how much time and energy and effort it's going to suck you in. But I could tell you that sometimes claims cost far more in the distraction of senior management and ownership and investors than it ever would have in the actual benefit of the claim. And so what is the straightest line? A risk manager can help you. And by the way, a lot of people don't want to do that because they don't want to be taken advantage of by the claimant. Mm-hmm. But when they're working with somebody like me, they know they're not going to be able to take advantage of us because yep. they're talking to a competent person at the other end of the phone.
Love it. Love it. Computer. Yeah.
So what I'm trying to share in this, Paul, is that A, this is not a, first of all, this is a business that you can get a license in a matter of 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think you could be an expert in the world of insurance in 60 days, you have another thing coming.
Yeah.
This is that you now have a license to be very, 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 very destructive instead of constructive, because your license lets the insurer transact with you. It validates that the state says you're qualified to do it. The insurer is not going to validate and verify whether you know really what you're working on or not. You've submitted an app and they're going to process that app.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nope,
and so
great.
The guy that brings a piece of paper to a new broker and says, well, this is what I'm paying now. And that guy takes it and he reverse engineers it onto his own app and he goes to his own markets and he goes, oh, look, I can save you $100. That $100 might have cost you $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, and you might actually find spending $300 more saves you millions.
Yep, of course. So yep.
What you have to do is have somebody that can help you evaluate the value of the form and the premium and the protection so that you're indemnified the way you actually envision it versus what you experience. And I will tell you, anybody that has a bad experience with an insurer, they like to blame the insurance company because they don't want to own that they did it to themselves
mm-hmm.
by mm-hmm. not engaging properly at the time of transaction. And I'm actually an expert witness in the world of transactional insurance. I get hired by law firms and go in front of judges and juries and actually define what should have happened versus what did happen. And being that expert witness, I have always turned that as our standard at this agency. But I will assure you that standard is much higher than the typical. And I'm not doing this as a commercial today. I'm just sharing that if everybody asks the right questions and if they learn what questions to ask, then they will start to realize whether they're talking to the right people or not. And,
right.
if they engage their broker right. the right way, then they yep. can end up with an outcome far better than they currently are.
Love it. Great stuff. We could talk about this forever. It's very, very informative. Jerry, I want to thank you for your input. It's invaluable. I want to thank everybody for listening. And as always, we have a way for you to get a complimentary assessment with Jerry around this video. It'll be there in the content. So get one-on-one with Jerry and the team. You'll love it. Give you some input on your own situation. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Jerry.
Nice to meet everybody. I hope that you found some value in this. And Paul, it was as much fun for me. And I hope that it was engaging for everybody else.
Absolutely. All right. See ya.
Bye now.